The man considered to be the most polarizing figure in Indian politics has become the country's new prime minister. Intellectuals, especially in the West, have concerns about Narendra Modi. After all, it was under his watch as Gujarat's chief minister in 2002 that more than 1,000 people, most of them Muslim, were killed in what's been called an intercommunal bloodbath. But others, including the middle class who've embraced the Modi factor, feel that his leadership will mark a new chapter for India. As an economically savvy politician who did wonders in Gujarat, they hope he'll do the same for the whole country. Meanwhile, the Congress party met this week to discuss its humiliating defeat. So, who is Narendra Modi? Well, I'm joined from the BBC studio in New Delhi by the senior South Asia correspondent for the German media, Padma Rao. And in our Adelaide studio is Dr. Peter Mayer from the University of Adelaide. He's the author of Suicide and Society in India. Welcome, both of you, to Late Night Live.
Hello, Francis.
Thanks.
Padma, I want to begin with you. Polarizing or not, Narendra Modi managed to win the biggest number of seats since 1984, and yet some journalists, people like Pankaj Mishra, have likened him to Vladimir Putin. How do you react to that?
Well, Richard, actually, Pankaj Mishra seems to have likened him, I think you're being kind, he's likened him to Adolf Hitler, which to my mind is, and he's, you know, and I quote from the article by Pankaj Mishra, he said he was, that India was entering arguably the most sinister period since its independence from British rule. I think if you go through the article, he's discarded a lot of historical facts to declare a sort of an absolute similitude between the new Indian Prime Minister and the evil brain behind gas chambers. And not only does that, you know, divert attention from the more urgent problems facing the incoming government, but it also turns what ought to be scholarly debate into a kind of an arbitrary defamation, you know. If I may, I'll just quickly list what the major, you know, differences are and why Mr. Narendra Modi can in no way be compared to someone like Adolf.
I want to bring in Peter. I'll come back to you too. So, Peter, how would you describe Narendra Modi?
Well, Richard, I've been thinking about it, and more I think I would tend to describe him as being something less familiar in South Asia, but very familiar in Southeast Asia, which is really an autocratic developmentalist, somebody like Lee Kuan Yew, Mahathir Mohamad, maybe even Suharto, somebody who's a very firm administrator, maybe somebody who's a bit soft on due process, but whose reputation is one for getting the job done, getting the bureaucracy to perform, sweeping obstacles out of the way, maybe running over the odd farmer or the other person who's in the way, but somebody whose reputation, and undoubtedly this is what we're going to be watching, is somebody who gets results.
Yes, well, I'll come back to that, because it's what I guess many people are hoping he can achieve. But Padma, I understand that the campaign was devoid, or largely devoid anyway, of the Hindutva agenda, which has been crucial in the past for his party, the BJP. So can we put that discussion in context? I get you to briefly describe what it is.
Yes. You know, this is actually one of the things that stood out about his campaign, and it actually turned quite a lot of the expectations from his critics on their head. Because, I mean, if you know that, you know, the demolition of the mosque in the early 90s, those were really intolerant mobs belonging to certain organizations that support the BJP. And then there were the Gujarat riots, which you referred to in 2002. But it's been, you know, frankly, it's been 25 years or 24 years since the mosque and 14 years since the Gujarat riots. And the BJP has been toning down and trying to explain what that term Hindutva means. Hindutva, according to the BJP, is not Hinduness, but it's an Indian way of life. And this is something that, you know, modern Indians, young Indians, increasingly tend to agree with. What the BJP is really trying to say is that, you know, it's only when every community in this country, the Muslims, the Christians, and everyone belongs here, feel Indian, that they're Indians first, and only after that, you know, belong to any particular religious group, that's when the country is actually going to be able to move ahead. And that's one of the things that the Congress Party wasn't very successful at doing. In fact, the Congress Party's so-called secularness, sort of continue to hand out sops and freebies to communities, and also continue to allow a civil code. You know, every community has its own civil code, every religious community. That's one of the things that the BJP would like to actually remove, so that there's a uniform civil code, so that everyone, you know, one law applies. And this is something that I do tend to agree with. I think that, you know, as long as this country doesn't feel, as long as every Indian doesn't feel Indian first and not, you know, Christian or Muslim or Jewish or whatever else, as long as we don't have that, we're going to continue to see occasional violence.
All right. Well, Peter, before you compared Mr. Modi to people like Lee Kuan Yew and Mahathir Mohamad, is he capable, though, of bringing the economic success of Gujarat, where he has been very successful, onto a national scale?
I think we have to wait and see. It's a very complex operation. India is infinitely complex. It's not like Gujarat. It'll be a real challenge for him. And so I think the question is in the air. But if anyone can do it, Modi undoubtedly is the person who will try. He doesn't have many of the levers that a chief minister in a state has, because so many of the things which are really crucial, like electricity or roads and so on, are not necessarily really things that come out of Delhi, although Delhi has the money for them. It will be by remote control. And Modi is a centralist. Modi appears to be somebody who brings power into his own hands, who disempowers his MPs, who left pushed to the side when he was in Gujarat, the RSS, which is this militant, let's call it quasi-paramilitary wing of the BJP.
Which is where,
the affiliates.
Where he began, isn't it?
Well, it's where he began. But he, against all expectations, the reports are that he really, you know, marginalized them, and when you expect that will happen in the center. But whether he can do the same kinds of time-bound really forced marches that he did in Gujarat, whether you can do that from Delhi, out in the provinces, out in the far reaches of Bihar or Jharkhand, or name your remote part, that I think people certainly hope. I mean, the expectations are sky high. Whether he will be frustrated in that or not, I think we'll have to wait and see.
Padma, what do you think? Because he did achieve some really impressive things in Gujarat: malnutrition and poverty reduced, quality of education improved. Interestingly, I read the other day, Gujarat now has the lowest poverty ratio for Muslims in rural areas.
That's right.
Do you think he can actually make a difference across this much bigger scale of 1.2 billion people?
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, had he not actually received that absolute majority, had the BJP not been voted in so overwhelmingly as they were, I would have agreed with Peter, and, you know, said that he might have run into problems in the odd state, like in Bihar or like in states which are not. But the thing is that what surprised everyone is this astounding majority that the BJP got, you know, all over the country, and I think that is going to make it easier for him to replicate much of what he's done in Gujarat and centralize a lot of things. I mean, he's already announced, for instance, over yesterday and today, that he intends to keep his cabinet very small, and he intends to give individual ministers more power and more responsibility. He doesn't want to have a sprawling cabinet, and he doesn't want, you know, he wants to cut down on bureaucracy. So he has already announced that he plans to replicate much of what he did in Gujarat at national level. And I think, as I said, you know, just the astounding majority that he has is certainly going to be helpful for him to do that. And you know, if you ask me as a voter, do I believe that, you know, that is going to happen? I do think it's going to happen. And I do think what is also very good is the fact that there are many Muslims, who've actually voted in let's say, in small cities and pockets with Muslim majorities. They actually voted the BJP, and the reason they voted, and, you know, I just wanted to quickly tell you that there was an interview this morning in the Times of India with the head of an Islamic cultural center in India, and he, you know, and the headline says Muslims wanted change and they rejected fear and they voted for the BJP, and that it's a clear mandate that every community wants good governance. So that, I think that will be the key to his success.
This is Late Night Live on RN. I'm Richard Ady. We are profiling the new Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, with Indian journalist Padma Rao and Australian academic Peter Mayer. Peter, I want to ask you about something I read the other day. William Dalrymple in The New Statesman He said India's knowingly taking a terrific gamble on its future, in effect choosing to ignore Modi's record on human rights in return for a strong leader who'd be brave enough to make the difficult reforms and provide economic prosperity this country's craving. Is that a fair summation?
I would say that's spot on. Yeah. It seems to me exactly right. I think the risks, and Padma I think is right, that a lot of water has flown under the bridge. You and I are concerned naturally about what happened in 2002 in Gujarat. The Indian electorate has decided that they can wear that, that nothing's happened since then. And they're fed up with the kind of inertia, the immobilism that's characterized especially the last 5 years of the Congress government. There's a lot of youth who want jobs. There's a sclerotic quality in India. You know, people say, you know, India grows at night when the bureaucracy is asleep. But there's a sense in which you really want somebody who's just going to push this debris, this clutter, this whatever we want, or whatever metaphor you choose, out of the way, that things will happen, and that the kind of entrepreneurial spirits, the animal spirits, which everybody knows, as soon as you take Indians out of India and let them get going, they are fantastically successful, and somehow the system that's there is holding them down, and people just, I think, want to rip it away, and they really want results. And as Padma says, I mean, I think if you look at the results, kind of one of the things that's striking for me is the people who stood up against the Modi wave, who were successful, people like Jayalalitha in South India, in Tamil Nadu, were the people who have achieved something similar in their own states in terms of pushing through results, being strong leaders. And I think people are willing to take the gamble that Dalrymple sets out, that you quoted, with a strong leader if he can perform. And if he doesn't, I suspect, you know, that his tenure will be shorter than we expect now.
Padma, I want to mention, because Peter just was talking about the people who stood up successfully against the Modi wave, we have to talk about the people who completely capitulated to the Modi wave, which is the Congress Party. What does this mean for the Gandhi dynasty? Because I understand that both Rahul and Sonia have offered to resign from the party, but that suggestion's been turned down. They will have to do some serious soul searching. What's likely to happen next?
Just quickly to add to what Peter was saying, I absolutely agree with him about Jayalalitha and people who, you know, who won, who stood up against Modi before the elections. Well, there's a lot of cozying up happening right now in India, and Jayalalitha and Modi have been speaking each other as each other's very good friends. So that, you know, besides that, to come back to the Congress Party, even if in its soul searching, Richard, of the last days, has proven to be a disappointment. They simply have not read the message that Indians are sick of the Gandhi Nehru dynasty. They wish them well, but they have proven to be disasters at leading that party. And, you know, the party has many able politicians, and all these able politicians, instead of accepting the offer by Rahul Gandhi and Sonia Gandhi to resign, the party has been rallying all around them, or rather crawling at their feet all over again. I mean, you know, this is the biggest problem with the Congress, is that it lacks, they have good politicians, but they lack in self-confidence, and they clutch to the Gandhis almost like Linus's security blanket, you know. I mean, even the old charismatic connection with Nehru, you know, he was the founding father of the country, that no longer cuts ice with third-generation voters. I mean, India's majority population is under 30 years old. They, you know, many of them don't even know who Nehru was. So it's not the foreignness, it's the eliteness of the Gandhis and the aloofness that young Indians cannot and will no longer identify with. And I believe that if the Congress is to survive, it must let go its Gandhi hang-up. I think that's going to be very important.
Certainly from here, it did look, in the limited coverage of the election, we got to see that the Rahul came across as sort of handsome but not incredibly bright and not very connected, despite some very, very embarrassing-looking images of him. It almost looked like he was photoshopped into pictures with other people. Not very connected with ordinary people's concerns.
Yeah.
But Richard, we should add that it was a catastrophe not only for the Congress, but for a lot of other parties. And there's a great deal of soul-searching that's going to go on. I've been trawling through, or beginning to trawl through, the results in the huge northern state of UP. And, you know, two of the major parties there, let's just go by the initials and forget the details, the SP and the BSP, were fighting it out in constituency after constituency. And in a lot of constituencies, the result of that was that the BJP came through with 30 to 40% of the vote. If they had come together, they would have had, in many cases, a majority. The Congress, though, was running usually fourth or fifth. So part of it was, I think, that the Congress itself was clearly on the nose. Nobody wanted to be their allies, and the kind of alliances, the kind of switching out of, you know, sorting, I'll stand in this constituency if you let me stand, and I'll let you stand there, so that they didn't split the vote, because India has a first-past-the-post voting system, meant that the BJP also consolidated on the fact that its rivals were fighting and dividing what might normally be the non-BJP vote.
Can I ask briefly about foreign policy and Mr. Modi's relationship with the US? He was not granted a visa there in 2005 because of we go back to the riots in Gujarat in 2002. Padma, how do you see the future of that critical Indian-US relationship?
Sure. Well, you know, as you would have gathered, President Obama has been making noises, so to speak, you know, over the last week or so, and then he called, and I think Senator Kerry's just sent another longer message of congratulations. I think what's going to happen is Modi is a person who's not likely to forget the slight and the humiliation that he's had to put up with over the, you know, last 14 years, with the denial of the visa, and of course he knows, but he's smart enough to know that, you know, things like this usually happen at the behest of human rights groups in various countries. I mean, the European Union has been rather wishy-washy about its relationship with Modi until right up to earlier this year, when the German ambassador had a secret meeting with Modi, and, you know, so they're all trying to all the countries. The big countries with an eye on investment in India have been trying to juggle their relationship with Modi. Specifically about the United States, I think Modi is too smart to allow the slight over the visa to dominate or determine relations with the United States. And already today we have a headline that the United States are looking, you know, for some sort of joint naval operations in the Chinese seas. So, you know, it's all about strategy. It's all about the Indian Ocean region. It's all about containing China, which is a mutual interest that both countries have, and of course it's about investment and economy, and then there's the nuclear deal which Modi will certainly carry forward. So I think overall the relationship is too deep and too long for it to be sort of frittered away merely over a slight over a visa. So I really think that foreign policy overall is going to look ahead. And may I just add that, you know, I think one of the most biggest concerns for the rest of the world is India and Pakistan. And the swearing-in ceremony of Modi is taking place on the 26th of May. And one of the first invitations that went out, New Delhi routinely invites the heads of state of the regional, you know, the neighboring countries. And one of the first invitation that's gone out is to Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif of Pakistan, and I think by now he would have accepted the invitation as well. So he's obviously, he means business. He wants to get going straight away on foreign policy as well.
Well, on that optimistic and hopeful note, I'd like to thank you both for joining me today.
Cheers.
Thanks very much, Richard.
That's Padma Rao, who's Senior South Asia Correspondent for the German media, and Dr. Peter Mayer, who is Associate Professor at the University of Adelaide, author of Suicide and Society in India, which is published by Routledge. One of the more interesting things that I read about him just in the last day is that apparently he's rather addicted, Mr. Modi, to, when he's finished the day, hopping on the computer and checking stories about himself on Google. Aren't we all? This is Late Night Live on RN. I'm Richard Ady. Next, who burnt the Reichstag? The conspiracy stories continue.